Okay, so my name is Tim Owen Jones, and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust and the One Another Project in Trafalgar Square, London. It's the 28th of September 2009, and the time's approximately 20 past 12. If you could tell me, please, your name, your age, and where you come from.
My name's Alex Leffley, I'm 25, and I live in Balham at the moment, but I grew up in Newbury.
Okay, thank you very much. When was it you first found out about the One Another Project?
Crikey, it must have been about 5 or 6 months ago, possibly. Yeah, and I think I read about it in one of the London Free Sheets, and then I originally applied for something to do with some job stuff I was going to do, but then I switched jobs, so I decided to do it for myself.
Great. So how did you feel when you received an email or telephone call to say you'd been allocated a slot?
I was actually genuinely really shocked, because I just it was one of these things I thought it might happen, but lo and behold, it did. It was, yeah, really surprising, really surprising.
And what have you decided to do for the duration of the hour?
It probably won't take the entire hour, but I'm going to be reading Skin by Roald Dahl.
Can you expand on a little bit of what, tell us what the story is about?
Well, the story Skin, it's about a tramp who walks past an art gallery and sees a picture of a painting of someone who he used to know when he was younger. And then it then goes into the story about how this famous artist painted a picture on his back and then tattooed it. And then the man goes into the art gallery and shows off this tattoo. And in the end, a very rich man says, "Let me take you out for dinner. I'd like you to go to a hotel and stay in my hotel in the south of France, just walk around shirtless, showing it off." And he takes him out for dinner, and then 6 months later, this wonderful early piece of work appears in Buenos Aires, and the man no longer exists. So it's a bit dark, it's a bit twisted. It's kind of, it's typical Roald Dahl in that, you know, it always has a slightly macabre twist at the end, but I just think it's obviously because it's about an artist and it's about art and it's about living art. So I figured, you know, it did kind of resonate really well with the project.
Right. So what kind of other thoughts have you had about the project?
It was very tricky, really, because I wanted to try and do something original, but at the same time, I also just wanted to do something that was going to be relatively easy and simple. I didn't want to overwork something like this. I think it's just, you know, do something that, you know, that I'm interested in, that, you know, I mean, I read a worrying amount of books, so it felt right that I read something. And also, you know, it's lunchtime, so let's give some people some lunchtime entertainment whilst they're eating their lunch.
Cool. So what is it you get up to? You mentioned you read a lot, so what is it you get up to in your spare time as well as professionally?
I spend a lot of time in the pub, really, to be perfectly honest. It's, you know, when you work ridiculous hours like I do, most of my free time I just spend catching up with friends. And it just so happens that, you know, we like a drink. Basically, so that's pretty much it.
And day job, what is it you do for
anything? I work in public relations. So I represent various clients and in their kind of social media space.
How did you get into that?
Pretty much fell into it. I started off doing traditional PR and then got offered a job doing specialising in social media PR and kind of went from there, really. Yeah.
So what would you say the kind of, you know, the most significant parts of it, or moments of the job for you? What is it you enjoy about it, don't like about it? How does it suit you as a person?
Well, me as a person, I mean, it suits me because it's constantly changing. I mean, I never do the same thing twice. It's, you know, you've always got to be thinking up new things. It's genuinely, you know, it's hard work, and that's why I like it. You know, I like to be pushed, you know, in a work situation, and I like to generally try and kind of, you know, really work hard. So it's challenging. You know, there's plenty of opportunities to pitch. You can be creative with some of the ideas you do and things like that, especially if you've had some difficult clients, then you know, the challenge of trying to do something interesting with them is, you know, I find it really rewarding.
And a little bit more about your background. What were you doing before you kind of got into PR?
Well, after I left school, I've done various bits of travelling. I've been to Kenya, Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia. And yeah, and then I kind of went and did my degree. I went to University of Sussex and did a BA in geography. And then I moved on to University of East Anglia where I did a master's in marketing. And then kind of went straight into work from there, really. So yeah, it's a bit an interesting path to PR, but yeah.
And the significance of travelling and geography, can you tell us about some of the experiences you had abroad?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the best story, and it's always a good one, is when I was in Vietnam, I got arrested and accused of being a spy because I didn't have a passport and I was in the country, and they thought I'd smuggled myself in through China. So I now lost my passport, I had to go get a new one, and obviously I got the new one. But then when I went to go and get a new visa, I was interrogated by Vietnamese police for 4.5 hours whilst they tried to decide whether I was actually just there travelling or whether I was a spy. So that was quite exciting.
And so how was that at the time? What was
I think I was absolutely petrified at the time. But it was kind of like, all the time I was thinking, I'm British, it's going to be absolutely fine, you know? I have the greatest passport in the world. There's no way they'll put me in prison. No way, no way. And then afterwards, I was just shaking like mad afterwards. When you finally got out, I was like, right, I need a drink. But it was, very stressful experience. But yeah, it was good. It was one of these things, it's you look back on it and go, oh, it was brilliant. At the time, it was horrendous. But I don't know, I think it certainly proved that I could deal with things and, you know, deal with tricky situations with kind of calmness and a cool head, which was good. So yeah, can't complain about that.
And then what about kind of some of the other places you visited? What kind of motivated you to travel in the first place?
I don't know. I've always been interested in just going to other places and seeing new things. And it's, you know, when I was in Kenya, I climbed Mount Kenya. When I was in Thailand, I just went and sat on a beach. But, you know, I think the point is I do, you know, I like to do lots of different things. I've been going around kind of Cambodia and visiting Angkor Wat at kind of sunrise and sunset. It's absolutely amazing experience. It's just something that you can't quite explain until you've been and, you know, seen there and done it. And I think it's something that I was, you know, very fortunate enough to be able to do. And, you know, and it really does, you know, so many people think traveling is just an excuse to go traveling and get drunk, but it really can have like quite, you know, it does have an impact on your life in some way or another, definitely.
So how would you describe yourself as a person?
Crikey, it depends who you ask, really. Definitely, I'm fiercely loyal. Like, I'm immensely loyal to my friends and, you know, will do anything for my friends. Can be quite cheerful. I can also be a grumpy, miserable bastard, which most of the time at work I am. But I don't know. I mean, I'm very laid back most of the time as well. Like, you know, things, I try not to let things worry me. I organise things, but at the same time, if it doesn't happen, it's not the absolute end of the world. So I think that's probably the best way, really.
What?
And apparently, though, what recently I discovered, I was talking to various friends and it's like, oh, that person has such a bad influence on me. Oh yeah, and that person such a bad influence on me. And one of my co-workers said, are you sure it's not you that's the bad influence? And I was just like, oh crap, I am. So I'm officially the bad influence now, apparently, which is great.
Expand on the bad influence.
Well, it's always the, you know, it's you know, having a few, you know, a couple of quiet drinks with a son, you know, with Sunday lunch. Next thing you know, it's, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday and we've all got work, that kind of thing. And apparently it's usually my idea, not that I can ever remember, but apparently it's my idea to go and do things like that. Or, yes, it's a great idea to go to a strip club, at, you know, for lunch and things like that. So, yeah, that kind of bad influence.
Okay, cool. What hopes, plans do you have for the future?
I think ultimately I'd like to move abroad, work abroad, not necessarily forever, because, you know, as much as whatever state this country's in, it is still, you know, home. So I'd like to have the experience of working abroad for, you know, 2-3 years. Obviously have a family, all that kind of thing, you know, nice house in the country, 2.4 children, 2 dogs, you know, the usual kind of cliched middle class story, really. So that's the kind of hope and aspiration, really.
And what fears, worries, concerns do you have?
I don't know, always not being good enough at my job is always a fear. I think at the moment, I used to, you know, 6 months ago I'd have said I'd be worried about losing my job. Bit less worried about that at the moment. I think just generally, I think, you know, things are going to start getting really hard just generally in the next few years, and I think that's, you know, something that obviously I need to worry about. I mean, you know, it seems like, you know, the really boring things, but house prices are still going up and, you know, salaries aren't matching that, so whether I can actually afford to buy a house or not. So not necessarily a worry right now, but in a few years' time it will be. general, you know, health issues, things like that. Eventually, when you're older, no one wants to get old and die, but everyone does. So, yeah.
And going back to the project, a little bit, how does it feel then to be one of 2,400 people that get to represent the UK, the snapshot of the UK at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's really fascinating. I think I'm really pleased to be part of it, and I think it's going to be something that, you know, I'll definitely be able to look back on. And it's yeah, it's just something. It does feel really good, actually, to be sort of part of something that you know is going to be archived, in theory, forever and ever and ever, which is, you know, knowing that I actually took part in something that ultimately matters and that wasn't just making people sell stuff. So, I'm really pleased to be part.
And the artistic concept, you thought a little bit about kind of, you know, the art and things. Well, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I did history of art at A-level, so I think there's a book called The Shock of the New that basically talks just about, you know, how modern art is shocking. I mean, I do quite like the idea of public participation in art. I think art can be immensely elitist, and I think even when you look back and you think of places like the Affordable Art Fair, where most pieces there for sale are, like, you know, in the thousands, it's like, ask the average man on the street if that's an affordable piece of artwork, they'd probably tell you where to shove it. So I think in terms of in taking part in a non-elitist form, I think it's fantastic in that respect. Yeah, it's a piece of artwork. I think it certainly ticks the non-elitist. I mean, nearly 2,500 people is a lot of people, and presumably there's quite a cross, you know, you get a huge broad range of society. So it'll be interesting to actually break it down and see demographically if it is purely white middle class people who take part or not. But that's a wider debate on art and ethnicity. So.
So what kind of impact would you like your hour or the project as a whole to have on those that experience it, be they within it or you know, kind of walking past and seeing it?
If I made one person smile, I'll be happy, basically. That's all, you know, that's all. I'm doing it kind of for selfish reasons, really. I'm going up and doing it to say I've done it, and I, you know, it's for me, not necessarily for anyone else, which I appreciate is immensely selfish, but sometimes it's good to be selfish.
Have you got any other thoughts, comments on being part of the One Another project?
Not particularly, no. No, just want to get up there now.
Cool, thank you very much.
Great.